The House will come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to another new episode of Capital Ideas. It's the excellent podcast in which members of the majority Democratic contingent in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down for a little while in the Capitol and talk about ideas. Those ideas, by their very nature, are good ones that one way or another exemplify the Democratic values embraced by most people here in the Evergreen State. Today's Democratic lawmaker joining us is 21st District Representative Strom Peterson. Strom chairs the Housing Committee here in the House, which we'll talk about in just a minute. He's also a member of the Civil Rights and Judiciary Panel and the Budget Writing House Appropriations Committee. We talked on Wednesday, April 9th, 2025, and I'll play that recording now. Welcome back to Capital Ideas, Representative Strom Peterson from the 21st Legislative District, which I'm going to get you to tell people about because I didn't do that in the introduction.
Good morning. 21st District in Southwest Snohomish County. Edmonds and Muckleteer are the main cities, but I've also got a little bit of Everett, a little bit of Linwood, and some of that unincorporated county as well. Beautiful district.
It is a beautiful district. It's been 2 years and 2 months since the last time you were here on Capital Ideas. That's been a pretty eventful 2 years. One of the things I'm going to want to talk to you about today is obviously housing. You're the chair of the Housing Committee. You're the only chair the Housing Committee has ever had. And so since the Housing Committee was first spun off and given its own portfolio as a Housing Committee 3 years ago, I guess that problem's taken care of now.
Yeah, if only, right? Progress. And I thanks for that. I think that kind of goes to show that, you know, the House Democrats created a committee solely focused on housing a few years ago because the housing crisis is so acute across the state. And in that 3 years, I mean, we've done a lot. I argue that Washington State has probably done more for the supply of housing than any other state in the country. We've done work on permitting reform, on zoning reform, density, all of the things that we can do to get the supply of housing more robustly built. Unfortunately, you know, we're dealing with a few other factors. One, it takes a while for any kind of housing to get built. Cities have to adopt ordinances, although kind of that process. But of course, we're also facing, you know, high interest rates, unsure future now with tariffs and other labor force issues. So we're still struggling with actually getting the housing built. I mean, we see a lot of cranes in Seattle, and we see a lot of construction in Bellingham and in Bothell and Spokane and smaller towns around the state, but we still have a lot to do on the supply side as well.
Since you are the only chair that committee has ever had, I want to ask you, why are you the chair of housing? How did that happen instead of you being the chair of criminal justice or appropriations or some other committee? Why housing?
Yeah, part of it is that's one of my passions. I came into the legislature really wanting to work on a handful of things. Obviously, there's a lot going on in any legislative session, and it's always amazing, and I have to make sure I try to keep myself focused. But was really interested in criminal justice reform and really working on our incarcerated population, people that are in prison. Working on environmental issues, I was vice chair of the Environment Committee when I first came in, and then housing. And so as the housing crisis became more and more acute and we became more aware, you know, leadership came to me and asked if I'd be willing to do it. I jumped at the opportunity and really, really happy that I did that.
It has been one of the busiest committees in the entire legislature throughout what we're calling the housing crisis, which has been with us for a long time and seems like it's going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, you know, this has been decades in the making. We have been underbuilding housing. You could probably trace it back to the 80s. Where, you know, single family housing became the more popular thing to do because of tax breaks and the way the tax code was restructured as opposed to multifamily housing. So this was a decades in the making crisis. We're not going to get out of it quickly, But one thing that we are, I'm hoping that we accomplish this year, and the bill's making some good progress, is on rent stabilization to make sure that those folks that are seeing these astronomical rents rise every year, 20, 30, 40% rent increases, that they get some relief. And so we have House Bill 1217, which is just passed out of the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate, is headed to the floor in the Senate. And that's really exciting. So for all the supply work we've done, we still need to do some work on stabilizing those so many people in our communities that are renters.
Help me out here for a second, because I didn't do enough homework. Was 1217 amended in the Senate?
Yes, they changed it a little bit in the Ways and Means Committee. They added a 15-year sunset, and any new construction for 15 years is exempt. So anything that's built today for the next 15 years, it's exempt from the rent stabilization prices. I'm not thrilled with those amendments, but the core of the bill is the 7% rent cap every year, and that's really what's going to help people that are currently renting. And it's actually 5% for manufactured housing, so a lot of those communities that are seniors, people on really fixed incomes, they even have a little more protection.
That 15 years was 10 when it went over, correct?
We sent it over. We ultimately sent it over with 12, if I'm not, yes, 12.
So it's coming back to the House, in other words?
It will. I think it's, well, it's still got to get off the floor of the Senate, so we want to make sure that if they pass it as is, we'll have discussions to see if we want to concur with the changes that were made. So hopefully they can keep it relatively clean and we can get this to the governor's desk.
Good luck.
Thank you.
That was one of the more contentious floor debates of the year here in the House, and I suspect it'll be pretty interesting in the Senate as well.
Yeah, this is really touches on a lot of issues. This is almost like one of those cultural hot points that you see in politics. Rent stabilization really brings a lot of people to the table.
Another housing bill that was pretty monumental was middle housing a couple of years ago. And I noticed one of the bills that you're sponsoring this year, which apparently won't be passing here in 2025, has to do with middle housing. What's the difference between what passed 2 years ago and what you are sponsoring this year?
Yeah, we've got a couple of bills this year. One that is moving forward that's sponsored by Senator Bateman. And it's kind of a follow-up to the middle housing. What we've seen happening is, even though we've passed House Bill 1110, the middle housing bill, a couple of years ago, a lot of cities still aren't adopting the ordinances that they should to follow the law to make sure that they're allowing for that kind of housing type. So Senator Bateman's crafted a piece of legislation that's really trying to hold cities accountable to make sure that they are following the law, that they can work with the Department of Commerce to make sure that their ordinances are up to date, to make sure that they're following, you know, all of the things that we've done over the last few years. And if not, then there are some penalties that could be involved. So that bill is moving forward. I had a different bill that dealt with more of the emergency type housing. So step housing, as we call it, but it's emergency shelters, permanent supportive housing, the type of housing we need for those people in our communities that are really, really struggling. And again, unfortunately, some cities are making really onerous zoning laws to make sure that that housing doesn't happen in their communities. That's not right. It's actually illegal from other work that we've done in the past. So we had another accountability measure that didn't quite make it. It hit a few raw nerves, but we'll be back.
Good luck.
Thanks.
I want to change gears here for a second. I want to come back and talk in a minute about a couple of other bills of yours that have passed the Senate and apparently are on their way to the governor now. But before we do that, I want to talk about octopus farming.
Yes.
2 years ago, you successfully sponsored a bill that made octopus farming in Washington state waters illegal. I don't know if it ever took place here, but now it never will. This year, you sponsored a bill that went a little bit farther. Legislative staff aren't allowed to lobby for bills. If we were, I would. I'd like to hear about that bill and find out, what do you think about its future?
Sure, it's great. Yeah, so I, you know, introduced this bill to ban octopus farming in Washington state. There weren't any octopus farms, but we know this is happening around the world. People are farming octopus, these incredible sentient creatures. So we thought it was a good kind of statement to make sure that that would never happen in Washington. That bill passed, got amazing international coverage. I actually was able to travel to London on just family, personal, you know, fun vacation, and met Lord Andrew Ainslie, and we had tea together because he's working on octopus legislation for the UK. He's in the House of Lords. So it's remarkable. The follow-up bill was to ban the import of farmed octopus. So as I said, these octopus farms are cropping up, you know, some in the South Pacific. There's one that might be happening off the coast of the Canary Islands. So there's, again, there's an international movement to make sure that we ban the farming of octopus because they're such amazing creatures, and that's just one of those that should not be penned up.
If I was allowed to agree vocally, I would agree vocally. A couple of bills that you sponsored this year that have passed, and one of them very recently, one has to do with so-called prison riots, and the other one has to do with court interpreters. And I'd love to hear you talk about both of those bills.
Yeah, sure. So court interpreters is, you know, a little bit personal. My mother-in-law, who passed away not too long ago, was a court interpreter for years in New Mexico, where I grew up. And so she worked in both the federal and state courts in New Mexico. So I always have a soft spot for interpreters. She spoke a number of languages, but primarily Spanish was her vocation. So always was regaled by amazing stories of what happens in court and really how people could access justice. People that did not speak English, whether they were witnesses or somebody that was being prosecuted or somebody that was on the other side, really giving people the access to justice. So this bill is going to make it a little bit easier for courts to process to find the certification and get more interpreters. So more people in our community speaking so many different languages across the state will have that access to justice. So that one's a little shout out to my mother-in-law, Margarita.
That's great. I didn't know the backstory on that bill at all.
And then, the prison riot bill, this is something that somebody brought to me. They'd been doing some work with DCYF in Green Hill, and we know the problems of Green Hill. It's overcrowded, all sorts of issues with, you know, with fights and with the things that happen when they're overcrowding. And these are, you know, these are young men. And because of the work that we've done understanding brain science, they're, you know, people that are adults, but they committed their crimes when they're juveniles. So up to 25 years old, somebody can be in Green Hill. Well, we've got too many people there, and that crowding can create, obviously, some tensions. But there's this very weird law on the books that if two people get into a fight, so, you know, a couple of guys get into a scuffle, that they can be charged with a felony called prison riot. And the prosecuting attorney in Lewis County was charging a lot of these young men, often kids, with this charge. And it was adding 2, 4, 6, 10 years onto their sentence. So they were just kind of in despair because they got into a fight with another guy and suddenly they're looking at 2 years of serious hard time as an adult. We didn't think that was fair. We think that young people, when they're in our care at these facilities, are meant to be rehabilitated and really not just punished. I mean, we know that if they do bad things, there are, you know, ways to hold them accountable, but this was a big overstep. So that bill just passed the Senate yesterday morning. Not sure when this is going to air, and I can't remember what day it is, but just recently passed the Senate. So that's just super exciting. This was one of those bills I didn't think was going to be able to move this year because it's a pretty volatile situation at Green Hill. But some of those kids testified, some of the people involved, some of the advocates for youth justice testified, and just caught the attention of the committee, and then it passed off the floor of the House with bipartisan support, and then again passed, it's on its way to the governor's desk.
If two young boys get in a fistfight in the hall of their middle school, which I think probably happens somewhere every day, they get separated and maybe they get suspended for 3 days. But if the same exact situation took place at Green Hill, it's potentially 2 years in an adult prison.
Yeah, it's a Class B felony conviction. So it's a felony conviction, and then there are fines. And so people that are might be getting out of Green Hill, and then they're faced with, they have $10,000 worth of fines they have to pay off. They're just trying to get their life started after hopefully being rehabilitated, getting some education, getting maybe some vocational training, and they're facing fines that they'll never be able to dig their way out of. So And the other part of this bill, it's actually retroactive. So we're going to look back 5 years. So these young people that have been convicted of this crime over the last 5 years, they can petition to the court, have these crimes vacated so they can get on with their lives. Pretty exciting.
I know I've got you for a very short period of time, Strom, because today caucus and floor action are going to start pretty early in the morning. Before we wrap this up, however, I want you to tell me what else you'd like to talk about, whether that's something that is part of your long-range priorities, whether it's a bill that you sponsored that we haven't talked about. What's on your mind?
You know, this year, I think what's on my mind of what's on everybody's mind is what a tough budget year this is going to be. This is the first year I've served on the Appropriations Committee. Not a good year to start on the Appropriations Committee when you're facing a $12 billion deficit. But I am incredibly proud of the work that the House Democrats have done, and especially the leadership on the Appropriations Committee, to craft a budget that's really hard. I mean, there's some really, really tough decisions, but they were dedicated to protecting the most vulnerable people in our communities. So they were really looking at health, really looking at housing, looking at food insecurity, and those were the programs that they did whatever they could to protect. I think they've done a marvelous job. We still have a ways to go. I think it's going to be harder before it gets easier, especially in the face of federal cuts. But I'm just incredibly proud of the compassion that our budget team leads with. And I think that says a lot for the state of Washington.
I agree. And I think that we've got 18 days to find out what happens.
Wow, 18 days. Aye, aye, aye.
Sorry. It's April 9th.
Yes, it is.
Representative Strom Peterson, this has been way too short. When we talked 2 years ago, I said that I would like to have you back sooner than later, and I will repeat that, and this time I'm going to do something about it, as opposed to waiting 2 years before we connect again. Strom, it's been a real honor and a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope that the next 18 days go exactly the way you would have them go.
Thanks so much, and yes, we will make this a more frequent occurrence, but really appreciate you.
Thank you. I enjoyed spending some quality time with Representative Strom Peterson, and I hope you did too. You can hear your Democratic representatives in this setting on a regular basis if you subscribe to Capital Ideas by hitting up your favorite podcast provider or by visiting the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov. Just click on the media button there on the homepage, and it's an easy process from there. What we talk about here, no surprise, is your state government. And what happens here is way beyond important, especially now. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889. That's 136 years, and they're just getting warmed up. Thanks for your time.